Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Lori Townsend.
Hello, thanks for joining us. The Alaska Federation of Natives is holding their annual convention in Anchorage this week. Thousands of people from all across the state attend the gathering each year to discuss and do business on wide-ranging issues. Some of them, such as housing shortages, the high price of energy in rural communities, and the need for more law enforcement, are perennial topics. And of course, emerging opportunities and challenges are also addressed. The state and tribes have a relationship that is at times tense, but there has been progress on some fronts. This week, there was an announcement that the first joint tribal-state court would be starting up in Kenai as a partnership with the Kenaitse Indian tribe and the state. A tribal and state judge will sit side by side and preside together over a wellness court. It was not many years ago that the state would not recognize tribal court adoption orders, so this is a move forward. But there are still challenges in this relationship between tribes and the state, and today we're going to be discussing another potential avenue for increased recognition of tribal government authority, and that is the ability of Alaska tribes to request having certain lands taken into trust by the Interior Secretary. The state is challenging that decision, and it's my understanding that just today there was a resolution passed by the leadership of the AFN board to ask the governor to dismiss the state's challenge, and we're going to talk about those things. Here to help explain what that legal distinction, commonly known as Indian country, means, are my guests, Native American Rights Fund attorney Heather Kendall Miller. Welcome.
Thank you, Lori.
Thanks for being here. And also, Doyon Limited's Vice President for External Affairs, Sarah Obed. Welcome, Sarah.
Thanks.
I should also say, I want to note that Sarah is, in the interest of full disclosure, is also a board member of Alaska Public Media, so
yes,
we'll let people know
Harper.
That. And I want to note that I also reached out to the governor's office and the State Department of Law, but they declined making someone available to present the state's side of the case. Heather, I really want to start with you. The Interior Department last year said Alaska tribes should not be excluded from the right of taking land into trust, that ANCSA did not extinguish that right, and the issue was sort of forced by an Akyachak case in which Akyachak and three other tribes and one individual brought a suit saying that tribes in Alaska should not be treated differently than tribes in the lower 48. Catch us up a little bit on that case and where the legal situation is currently.
Yes, well, the case was brought in 2007, and as litigation tends to go, it's taken a while to get here. But it was, as you say, a challenge to what is known as the Alaska exception. It was an exception in the land into trust regulations that barred Alaska tribes from the opportunity to apply for lands to be taken into trust. The Secretary of the Interior has discretionary authority under the Indian Reorganization Act to consider such petitions and to place lands into trust. But based upon a early opinion by the Solicitor's Office that concluded that the policy surrounding the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act would be an abuse of discretion for the Secretary to act on that authority, that's where the Alaska exception came from. So the lawsuit was brought to challenge that on the basis that it violated the privileges that federally recognized tribes in Alaska are entitled to under the Indian Reorganization Act. And the judge agreed with that decision, and that is the decision that is now currently on appeal. The federal government, while it was a party to that case as a defendant, switched course after the decision was rendered and decided that it was time to change the regulation, and it issued a notice to the public of taking such action and did a round of public meetings last summer, and then finalized the rule in January. thereby removing the Alaska exception from the regulation. Now, so the federal government did not appeal, but the state did. Very recently, the federal government filed a motion to dismiss the case on the ground that is now moot, on the basis that the offending provision, the bar, no longer exists. It's no longer a part of the regulation. And so the state has a response. They are opposing the dismissal of the case on mootness grounds, and their opposition will be due this coming Monday. So it's possible that the appellate court will take this question up first, and if it addresses the mootness argument, we'll dismiss the case altogether, because on the basis that it lacks jurisdiction, no more case or controversy. And then essentially what typically happens if a case is found to be moot, they vacate the lower court's opinion. If that happens, then the decision goes away. But what we'll also see is that the current injunction will be lifted and the secretary will be able to begin considering applications that the secretary may have received in the recent years.
There's two different ways that tribes can apply for taking land into trust, if I'm understanding this correctly. One are lands that are on reservation, and then there's also applications that can be made for off-reservation lands. Because Metlakatla is the only current reservation left in the state, there were others a long time ago, but there aren't any more now. Is this a higher bar then for tribes to apply to have lands taken into trust status?
Most certainly it is. Unfortunately, the regulation as developed really didn't have Alaska in mind. And a number of years ago, due to challenges that were brought by other states, the Supreme Court remanded to the agency and said, you need to have better criteria to examine the petitions that come before you. And so the Department of Interior adopted this on-reservation, off-reservation criteria. And the off-reservation criteria is a higher, given a higher level of scrutiny. And it takes into consideration more so the concerns of states and local governments the further the land that is asked to be taken into trust is from a reservation. So that does set a higher threshold for tribes in Alaska and is the subject, I think, of some concern by tribes that do have petitions that they want to have considered.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, I want to get you in here now. As the Vice President of External Affairs for Doi Unlimited, the Alaska Native corporations can't apply for trust land status because they're not tribes or corporations. But does Doyon have a position on this ability of tribes? How do the corporations see this?
Well, I think that's a good question. First of all, Doi Unlimited does not oppose land into trust in Alaska. We have engaged in the conversation as landowners in the state. I think, there's other Alaska Native corporations in the state that are trying to understand the process for the application process to take land into trust in Alaska. What does it mean in their region? What are the benefits of land into trust within each region? How can that be applied and used by tribes? And so participating, understand that process, I think that's key for Alaska Native corporations to understand. And so I think that's been kind of the ongoing conversation that we've been having as at Doi Unlimited. In addition to that, we've also looked at the regulatory process, the land into trust process that's been used in the lower 48, trying to understand that process. At Doyon, we've proposed to the Department of Interior that Alaska-specific regulations are adopted, what those look like. We haven't kind of determined what they should be, or I think that's a public process, really. But I do think that we've asked for, you know, Alaska-specific regulations that kind of meet the local needs of the state.
That's interesting. I want to talk a little more about what that might look like, but there has been some concern, and some of it I think is perhaps misplaced, but some of it may be valid as well about what this could mean in the future for land holdings. One of the concerns that I've heard raised is, won't the ANCs just take their commercial properties and transfer that land to tribes so that they don't have to pay taxes on those commercial properties? What would be your response to that?
So Alaska Native Corporation land cannot be put into trust status. I think that any corporation that would choose to transfer their land to a tribe would have to go through some kind of process. What is that process? I don't know. Would the board of directors decide? Would the shareholders decide? At Doyon Unlimited, we're a regional corporation. At the tribal level, like for example, I'm a member of the Native Village of Minto. It's not a regional tribal organization. It's at the village level. So thinking about that, it's just an open question on how that process works. Other than that, I mean, I guess, does that initially answer your question? Mm-hmm. Was it another part
can
of the question?
Can I add to that?
Yes, please.
ANCs corporations are also subject to state law. And any conveyance by a corporation to a tribe has to go through, essentially, state law requirements that give notice to shareholders, and that there has to be a majority vote. And this has to be done very, very carefully. It's not something that can be done easily because of the structure of the law. And so there would be, I think, some real serious obstacles for how a regional corporation could divest an asset of, you know, of great value, like a building that's been developed and such, to a tribe, because there would have to be, essentially, the tribe would probably have to purchase in order to be able to satisfy the state law requirements. And as we know, tribes don't generally possess millions of dollars mm-hmm. to be able to purchase outright. So again, there are inherent obstacles legally to a transaction like that.
This idea of, as you raised, Sarah, the idea of asking for some Alaska-specific rules when it comes to putting land into trust, is this something that you've heard the corporations talk about, and do you have an idea of what that may mean and look like?
Yes. Generally, anybody is entitled to submit a petition for rulemaking to the secretary. And in fact, that's how this case started. I submitted a petition back in 1993 asking the secretary to revise the existing regulation and withdraw the Alaska exception. And the secretary took no action on that, and that's what led to the litigation. So Doyon, anybody's entitled to submit a petition. I think the concern, however, is that has been expressed to me is that some of the corporations would like to have a veto right and be able to say, these former ANCSA lands, we have an interest in the subsurface, and therefore we should have the veto right to say, no, absolutely not, they will not move into trust. And that poses a problem because, again, the Indian Reorganization Act, as amended in 1994, requires the secretary to treat tribes similarly, not discriminate against tribes. Mm-hmm. So the secretary would not legally be able to adopt an Alaska-specific rule that grants corporations a veto right because that's not consistent with the secretary's obligations under law. That doesn't exist anywhere else. But could the secretary act upon a petition to revise the existing criteria to make it more specific to Alaska? Most certainly. And there's probably a lot of areas where the regulation could really do with improvements.
Tribes and the Native corporations often work together on economic development initiatives. Do you see this, based on what we're talking about right now and your earlier statement about looking for some potential rules to be put in place that are Alaska specific. Do you see this as a potential area of conflict between tribes and corporations if that can't happen?
Well, I, for one, am really encouraged by the governor of Alaska who created this tribal working group. I think it's a great opportunity for tribes to identify their concerns, why, and not just in a meaningful way. It's great to just say it, but, you know, what's the action behind it? And I think it's a powerful tool. I think it's, it will hopefully be used in this situation. I think Alaska Native corporations, you know, need to continue to be engaged with our tribes in our region. I think one of the concerns or, you know, possible concerns on the line that we've identified is really, again, access to a subsurface estate that we own, perhaps that the tribal organization owns the surface and gets put into trust. Working with the tribe in that case is absolutely essential. Even if the land is not in trust, working with that community, working with the tribe is, you know, makes for a successful project. However, it's getting approvals from the Department of Interior that really kind of would be a new issue for us, I think. And so we've raised that as a concern, both with tribal organizations who really support land into trust. We've raised it with the Department of Interior. And so I think that is one of the concerns that we're trying to work around.
So just more layering of federal bureaucracy is a concern?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So again, trying to understand the land into trust process, the application process where land is put into trust, but then once it's in trust, what approvals are we going to need from the Department of Interior? In addition to the tribe, will we need that are not there now?
Mm-hmm. Let's look at some past cases and how they may be different today. Heather, the Venati decision said that the tribe did not have authority to tax a contractor who was building a school. If the land were in trust status, would that tax have been valid?
Absolutely. The secretary's interpretation of lands into trust is that those lands qualify as Indian country, which is the general term used to establish tribal jurisdiction over an area of land. But I want to make a clear distinction. Venati's land was a former 1.8 million acre reservation,
right,
that the tribe decided to take in back in fee. Whether or not the tribe would ever want to try to put that land back into trust is something for the tribe to decide. And it may at some point in the future decide to do that, or it may not. The real critical issue here is one of self-determination and having a choice to be able to empower a tribe to utilize the tools that they need to govern their communities. I feel like I'd like to respond just briefly to Sarah and some of the concerns expressed by Doyon, in that the corporations need not be afraid of their own people, because
Absolutely.
It's the people themselves that are going to be making these decisions, and they're going to be doing it based upon what are in the best interests of their communities. So it is not something that I necessarily view as a issue that's going to create conflict, but one that will be a tool that tribes can use should they need. Now, for example, the plaintiffs in this case, none of them have Inkska lands. They each possess fee lands that they acquired two instances by a church. And it's these lands that they want to either develop and use for economic opportunity and yet protect the land base from borough taxation and such, or increase their ability to regulate alcohol, a common problem in most rural communities. So these are aspirations that are fully consistent with the Indian Reorganization Act that was established essentially to help tribes do exactly this. So it's opportunity.
I was talking to a tribal member from Fort Yukon who said that the way that they work together is they, if I understand this correctly, they had the corporation, their corporation, transfer the land back to the tribe, so the tribe manages it, but they work together on economic opportunities and development kind of hand in hand. Do you see this, Sarah, as a potential for those kinds of partnerships going forward, such as Heather said, where there's trust land, but you can find some ways to develop jointly.
So, and just to say that partnership is there with or without land to trust. So, and it's all across the state. Now, in the case of the Accutchak decision, absolutely, none of the parcels of land in the decision are not AXA lands, and so. Actually, it was a huge win for tribes. It was powerful. In the rule from the Department of Interior, it doesn't make that distinction. And so that conversation that takes place with the Department of Interior, I had a very difficult time kind of identifying what our concerns were with the Department of Interior, very much opted I don't feel like we were really heard by the Department of Interior. Did our tribal sister organizations hear us? Absolutely. I think they definitely heard our concerns and understand them. So, and again, those partnerships that take place between corporations and tribes happen with or without land and trust.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They have to happen for our communities to be successful.
Heather, are you aware of applications that are in currently, that are in now?
Yes, I am. Several. NARF hasn't done any applications, but I am aware of the fact that Clinton Haida has an application in. They have a building that they would like to see moved into trust. And I think maybe Fort Yukon, likewise, has an application in. So I think there's a handful of current applications that could be considered here in the short term.
Are all trust lands equal for tribes and individuals, or are there different layers of trust land status?
No, I think they're the same. What happens when the secretary agrees to take land into trust is that the federal government becomes essentially a partial landowner. The land is held in trust for the tribe itself. In that regard, trust land, like reservation land, as Sarah said, is managed by the federal government on behalf of the tribe. So there is no distinction between trust lands. They're generally treated the same.
There's already a very complex game management system in the state. It's federal and state and tribal. Will this add another layer of management on trust lands, or is it just the distinction between tribes owning fee simple land and now it's in trust land, so the regulatory process will be the same?
Well, first, violating state management laws is criminal. And Alaska is subject to Public Law 280, which vested states with criminal authority even in Indian country. And so even if lands move into trust, the state would still have jurisdiction to prosecute violations of hunting and fishing laws. Would it make it possible for the tribes to also regulate? Yes, it would. Maybe that could lead to greater opportunity for co-management in certain areas. That remains to be seen.
All right, and we just have a minute left. It seems as if there aren't a whole lot of a big divide here, so this seems like it's a potential opportunity for both tribes and corporations. Are there things that the state should fear in this decision?
I don't think so, and I think that the state is generally, at least the governor, is getting to that point. He's made references recently that he's taken this very seriously and he wants to move forward. So we're hoping to see a sea change in policy at that level.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with Heather.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you. It's all the time we have. Thanks to my guest, attorney Heather Kendall Miller, and also Doyon Communications Vice President Sarah Obed. Thank you both for being here. Alaska Edition will be back next week, and we hope you'll join us. Thank you for being with us today.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org. Or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.